Our guest is the host of Rip City Mornings, 6 to 9 with Dan Sheldon on Rip City Radio, a top analyst on the Pac-12 Network. On Twitter, use the handle at Coach N. Burton. Always look forward to welcoming in Nigel Burton. Coach Burton, how are we doing during these crazy days?
Oh, man, I'm doing well, Steve, man. How are you doing?
All is well. I mean, you know, at this point, can't complain. I have a job. I have a house. We're all healthy. I feel like it's a short checklist these days.
Oh, no question. No question. But I feel like we got some good times ahead of us, so that's good.
I'm with you. So you guys are so entertaining. I mean, I almost fell off the couch late Saturday night. So Ashley Adamson, who we love, welcomes in Coach Aliotti as their defensive expert. And you're like, hey, what about me? But as good as you all are at your jobs, all the preparation, I mean, how much fun are you guys having doing that show? Because it's so enjoyable to watch.
You know what? The best thing, even when I do my radio show with Dan Sheldon in the mornings here in Portland, you know, if you work with good people, it's pretty easy to have a good show because you're just enjoying yourself. And I have a blast doing that show. And Yogi and Ashley and Coach Aliotti. And so it is, man. It's a blast. And hopefully, you know, that stuff comes through on the, you know, to the people who are watching that we're having a good time. So hopefully they're having a good time.
You know, one of the things I thought was awesome about Ashley is she pinned Coach Aliotti down. She goes, so right now, if you had a pick, who might have the edge this early in the season, Washington or Oregon? And he tried. He goes, I like the Duck offense and the Huskies defense. And she's like, pick one. And he gave the nod to UW. So how'd you like his sales pitch there? Catch you off guard, the Duck going UW?
I mean, look, the one thing we know about Coach Al is he will speak the truth.
Yeah.
And same for me is, you know, as much as we have our allegiances, you know, if you ask us a question, we'll try to keep it straight with you. And so, you know, and I would agree, you know, I think, and I would say probably the difference, and which is why he, I think, ultimately said that UW right now, I mean, listen, Washington played the most complete game we've seen, the most dominating performance we've seen of any team versus another Pac-12 opponent.
Yep.
in this young season. And so, you know, I think the UW defense is probably has a bigger margin between the UW defense and the Oregon defense than the Oregon offense does over the UW offense. And which is a lot to say because, you know, the first game against the Beavers, the Washington offense looked okay. They didn't look like they were world beaters, but then they kind of took it to a new level against Arizona, who looked really good against USC the week before. And so, you know, Yogi and I both know Paul Rhodes really well, and we know he'll get that Arizona defense stronger and stronger. But the UW just took advantage of and took it to him throughout that game.
Talking with Nigel Burton, Rip City Radio, Pac-12 Network. I got to leap over to hoops. I'd imagine the morning buzz about the past week in Blazerland, from trading for Robert Covington at Houston, getting Enes Kanter up in Mello and Rodney Hood. I mean, I think they got tougher, better defensively, and deeper. So what's the word about Neil Olshey wheeling and dealing?
You know what? This is the thing that I think Blazer fans have kind of been irritated by Neil Olshey. You know, he just usually doesn't get involved. You don't see the Blazers getting play with a lot of big names, and that's exactly what happened, you know, in the last couple of days, really since Friday. I mean, you had the Robert Covington deal. You had the Enes Kanter deal. Like, you went down the list. You had Rodney Hood re-signing. Then you had Derek Jones Jr. coming over from Miami. And then polishing it off with Carmelo Anthony re-signing as well. And so now, you know, you have a team, I would say that honestly, you have a team that is about as deep as the Clippers were last year. They can easily go 10 deep and compete without a huge level of drop-off. Obviously, when Damian Lillard's on the floor, it's a different,
right.
They're just a different animal. But, you know, we won't see the massive drop-offs that you see out of most teams and because their depth is so deep. Now, the question is going to be, you know, if you make that comparison with the Clippers, I'll take Damian Lillard over anybody. I'll take him over Paul George. I'll take him over Kawhi Leonard. He's just one of the best scorers in the NBA. The question is, can C.J. McCollum be that second mega, you know, that second superstar. And right now, he's just a really good player. If he can raise his game to star, true NBA star level, you know, being an all-star caliber type of guy, I think the Blazers, at minimum, are the 3 seed and most likely, I think, a 2 seed. And that's only if the Lakers are able to stay healthy throughout the season. That's if other teams don't get banged up. And that's the beauty of the way that the O'Shea set this team up is, you know, they can withstand certain injuries right now because they have so much depth. Whereas in years past, Rodney Hood goes down and Yusuf Nurkic goes down. It's a wrap. They're just, you know, Zach Collins and Rodney Hood went down. It was just a totally different team. That could happen now, and they wouldn't skip a beat.
4 weeks too. It starts. So yeah. Math wise, I've been a diehard Knicks fan 8 years longer than you've been alive. So the reason I bring that up is because when Carmelo left New York via trade 3 years ago, that disastrous stint in Houston, it looked like his career might be over, and then the revival this year. So as a coach, as a player, I mean, how much do you have to respect a guy who realizes, look, I'm not the same guy, alters his game, and becomes all of a sudden like this beloved mentor?
Yeah, I mean, it says a lot for Melo, but to me, what it really speaks to is the culture that they've built there in Portland with Terry Stotts, Neil O'Shea, Damian Lillard, CJ McCollum, the way they brought in Yusuf Nurkic, who really, in Denver, the Nuggets kind of considered Yusuf Nurkic to be a spoiled brat, and he came in, and they opened their arms to him, and next thing you know, he became this leader of a franchise, and this beloved figure, and you know, same with Carmelo, you know, kind of resurrected his image and the way they opened up and it just speaks to the culture that they've got there, in Portland. And so, it's really cool to see. And now we'll see how Rocco and, you know, kind of gets involved. And we know what Enes Kanter, I mean, how much he embraced everything when he was here in Portland. So, it really just speaks to those guys up top and what they have built here that seems to sustain no matter what pieces you bring in.
Let's get back to Pac-12 football. In back-to-back weeks, we've seen the Ducks just a huge momentum swing to literally end the first half. Last week, it was the kick return, the bomb to Red, and the Verdell touchdown. This week, Jordan Happel, the pick six. Just how huge of a momentum swing is a play like that? And, of course, I'll let you give your shout-out to a fellow Jesuit crusader on an incredible play.
Well, you know, now I will say I'm not a crusader. My son's a crusader.
Oh, okay.
I'm a marauder. I'm a Jesuit marauder. It's different. We're down in Sacramento, so we're a little grimier. But no, man, it's, you know, it is. I mean, those plays are huge. And like I talked about on Pac-12 After Dark, I mean, it was a 3-hour and 30-minute game that you could have really just wrapped up at 22 seconds because it was 16 seconds between touchdowns when – obviously, McKinley had the fumble recovery that he batted to himself. The next play, touchdown in the corner, Devin Williams. The next play, the kickoff return gets fumbled. The next play, Travis Dye up the middle on the pass play from Tyler Shuck. And then obviously the 6-second play in which, Jordan Happel ends up returning a pick six. I mean, those were enormous plays and obviously were the difference. And so their quick strike ability is unquestionable. You know, right now, my concerns, if I was a Duck fan, the defense is not as stout against the run as they have been in the past, and they better get that fixed in a hurry because Jamar Jefferson just shredded a Cal defense that has a ton of pride in how they stop the run. And look, it's not like Cal didn't know going into the Oregon State game that if you stop Jamar Jefferson, you probably don't win the game because Tristan Jebbia hasn't shown it yet, and they haven't had anybody step up in the receiving corps yet that can take over the way an Isaiah Hodgins and Jake Luton could. And they still couldn't do it. He ran 18 carries for 196 yards. So if the Ducks don't get that thing shored up, I think this is going to be an interesting, we're not calling it a civil war anymore, but, you know, this is going to be an interesting rivalry game, no matter what. It doesn't matter, because that's just the way they always play each other. But I'm telling you, you know, this is not one of those years where I think the Ducks can just chalk up, oh, this is going to be a W. Because the Beavers are playing differently, and they found ways to win as opposed to finding ways to lose, which, you know, in recent memory, that's kind of what the Beavers have done. And last week was different.
Now, if you listen to the coaches today, I heard them, believe me, Jamar, that offense, the OSU has their attention like Well, you, like you said, some years it's more coach speak. I think they got the retention now. You brought up something Saturday night that I thought was spot on, even with a new quarterback on offensive line, the new coordinator, Joe Moorhead. He's not playing it simple. I think he trusts his guys. The playbook seems wide open. What have you made of his play calling and how the offense has operated the first three games?
I love it. I love it. It's exactly the kind of stuff that when I was a head coach that I loved that we did offensively. When I was at the University of Nevada, I tried to bring some of that when I was there, coach of Portland State, is I'm going to do certain things to you. I'm going to try to use the rules that you have defensively against you. I'm going to formation you to death. There was the touchdown pass that went to, oh, my God. This is what happens when you coach ball, right? You got too many names in your head, but you remember the numbers, right? So 48, the tight end, right?
Yeah.
So they line up, and so they go unbalanced to the left. If you actually watch the formation, there's two receivers that are on the line next to each other, which makes the inside receiver ineligible. But that's so tough for the defense to recognize because it's splitting hairs to them. So they overcompensate for the slot receiver who's actually covered up, which then creates a numbers issue on the inside, which makes them, for whatever reason, think that he wasn't eligible. So when they run the read zone, he arc releases. The safety there thinks that, oh, it's a run block. I got to show up fast. And then all of a sudden, Chuck pulls the ball, throws it, he's wide open. You know, those are fantastic, you know, just using that formation to throw the defense off. There was another play that I raved about with Yogi on the show. They go, it's a simple formation. It wasn't the formation wasn't the issue. They ran read zone. They pulled the guard. It wasn't read zone. It was speed option. But they pulled the guard to the right. Now, if I'm a linebacker, I'm trained that I operate in space and I use a triangle. I go from both guards to the near back. As soon as I see a guard pull, that tells me to start doing my shuffle steps in that direction. The problem is the ball is actually going the opposite way. And so to see Joel Moorhead use that knowledge of this is how I know linebackers are reading, this is how the secondary covers down, and I'm going to use that rule to hose them is fantastic. And it was art, man. It was literally like watching a work of art. And so he's going to have to continue to do that. While Tyler Shuck and the rest of these outstanding recruits they have become outstanding players.
Yeah, he seems like a coach who really just is enjoying the abundance of talent. One last thing, your Huskies, we glossed over it. They held off the Beavs a week ago. And then, like you said, forget the final score. It was 37-0 in the third. Jimmy Lake's got him 2-0. Certainly, Chris Peterson left a stable program, a pretty stocked cupboard. So, be it the play of the new quarterback, Dylan Morris, or the defense, what's popping? What are you liking about the Huskies two games in?
I mean, they still – the one thing I will say is the last 2 years on Montlake, they've had a problem getting a pass rush with four. I mean, once you saw Greg Gaines and Vita Vea and some of those names disappear, they've struggled. That seems to be gone. They're able to get pressure with three and pressure with four again. So that's a scary thing for especially, you know, pass-happy teams. Their secondary is – good Lord. as much as we rave about the Ducks recruiting, you look at the guy, I mean, Kyler Gordon in the back doesn't start, and that guy was offered by everybody, and he is a phenomenal talent, but they're just so deep. You're just trying to figure out a place for him. You know, Elijah Molden's going to be a first-round draft pick. I mean, you go down the list. Cam Williams, who was committed to Oregon, doesn't even start anymore. He lost his spot to a guy. And so, you know, the other thing I will say is Dylan Morris has just, we didn't know who was going to be the starting quarterback for UW. He's come out the gate and just, when you watch him, I see Jake Browning with a better arm. I see a guy who makes quick decisions, gets the ball out of his hands, has great command, but you don't hold your breath when he's trying to throw the ball 40 yards down the field. I mean, that thing comes out of his hand. He's got an above average arm. He doesn't have a howitzer. He's not Jacob Eason back there, but he definitely has an above average arm to make some of the more difficult throws that you saw, especially the Kate Otten and some things over the middle. So it's going to be fantastic, man. Hopefully both these teams, you know, obviously I coached at the Beavs, so I don't want to say too much, but more than likely, you know, Oregon should win that game unless the Beavs just, you know, continue to take the next steps. But we're kind of heading on this collision course of Oregon versus Washington on December 12th. It could just be phenomenal. And so I can't wait.
yeah, might have national implications. Folks, he is Nigel Burton, Rip City Radio in the morning, 6 to 9 with Dan Sheldon, a top analyst on the Pac-12 Network, and a guy we always look forward to chatting up on Twitter, at Coach N. Burton. Nigel, wishing you and yours a healthy and a happy and a safe Thanksgiving. Always appreciate your time, and obviously can't wait to talk again down the road.
You too, Steve. Appreciate you, man. Happy holidays.
Yeah, you too. Take care.